Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro, and this week my guest is the publisher of Take Control Books, Joe Kissel. Joe, good afternoon.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you for being on the show. So you are a writer and author with over 60 tech books to your credit. You've been a contributing editor with Tidbits. And in May 2017, you became the owner and publisher of Take Control series of ebooks. Pretty cool.
Those are all true facts.
But
and
before,
Go ahead. I have had sort of many titles and many careers, but that is a perfectly good explanation of what I do now.
And it's awesome. But before we get into some of that stuff, and I want to get into your career arc, because the other day when we were chatting, you told me a fabulous story about how you started with a bachelor's in philosophy. And that's an interesting start for a technical person. So tell me about that.
Well, you know, I used to joke that with a degree in philosophy, I was qualified to, you know, sit on a park bench and feed pigeons, and every once in a while, like, stroke my beard and go, aha, oh, no, wait a minute. And then just kind of repeat endlessly. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Like, philosophy is really interesting, and I learned how to think, and I learned how to write when I was studying philosophy. So those were valuable skills for me. It's really not the sort of thing that most. I mean, there are some professional philosophers out there. There aren't a whole lot of them. It's not. I didn't really plan for a career in philosophy when I was doing that, and then a few years later, I had sort of a similar thing happen when
I got you started on philosophy. I mean, was there a book you read or?
No, it wasn't that. It was more. This is probably a longer story than you would like to hear. We only have 35 minutes. But basically, I wanted to have the broadest possible major that I could. The thing that would qualify as, yes, he has a liberal arts degree, so we're going to let him into grad school, and, you know, you can check off that box on your job applications, but that would not be limiting, that would not, you know, sort of paint me into a corner like, oh, well, he's an English major, so he can only do this, or he's a chemistry major, so he can only do that. And I figured that philosophy was about...
Or you could be a physics major, and you can do anything.
Well, yeah.
I had to get that in, Joe.
Of course. No, that's okay. Like, I have a friend who has a PhD in geology, and she's now an author. I mean, like, writing, you know, young adult novels. So your college background does not determine your career. We go off in different directions and so forth. But little did I know all those years ago how very, very different my career would be.
But you got involved in a computer lab even as an undergraduate, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I loved computers as a kid. You know, in high school, we had TRS-80s in the computer lab there. And my parents sent me off to school. You know, so I went off to college in 1984, an auspicious year. But we didn't have money, so we didn't have a Macintosh. My parents sent me off to college with a Commodore VIC-20. And even at that, I thought this was really fancy, because I was one of very few students in college who had their own computer. And, you know, it had a cassette drive for mass storage.
Did that one have a built-in display, or was that the keyboard thing where you had to attach a monitor?
Yeah, I used a television as the display.
Ah, the old famous RF modulator.
Yeah, an RF modulator, exactly. Of course, my TV... black and white. The computer could display color, but my TV was black and white. And these were the days when, you know, the thing a student really needed was a word processor, but you had to make sure that the word processor you bought was one that supported the advanced feature of word wrap, so that you didn't have to actually press return at the end of every line. So those were kind of the days. But yeah, I worked in the school's computer lab. We had both IBM PCs and Apple IIs. And I loved to, like, fiddle with the startup floppies for the Apple IIs so that they displayed the IBM logo when they started up. That's how I got my kicks in college. Other people, I guess, did different things in college. That was what I did. And so, yeah, I loved fiddling with computers since way back when. I didn't plan for that to be my career.
Oh, I could tell you a story about White Sands Missile Range, but maybe we don't have time.
Another day.
Pranksters. yeah, I think I'll pass over that one. So you went on to study linguistics later.
Yeah.
How did you get from philosophy to linguistics?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I was taking these advanced philosophy classes as an undergrad, and we would learn about all these different philosophical discussions that had happened over the centuries, and these very famous philosophers debating endlessly about stuff. And they'd be talking about whatever, for example, the existence of God. And after studying about this forever, I started noticing something, and I went to the head of the philosophy department, my advisor, and I said, you know, we keep talking about these philosophical arguments, but it seems like when people are talking about what's ostensibly a philosophical issue like the existence of God, what they're really debating is the definition of the word God. And my teacher said, oh yeah, I mean, you know, most philosophical arguments boil down to discussions of linguistics. I'm like, so
what's the difference between linguistics and philology?
Well, depending on who you ask, they could be the same thing. I mean, philology is sort of an old fashioned word. I think C.S. Lewis might have referred to himself as being a philologist.
One of my favorite authors. That's why I brought that.
Yeah. I think nowadays the word philologist is not very much used. I think it was sort of, someone who studied language. But I think the term linguistics has largely supplanted that. But of course, anybody listening to this can Google it and probably come up with a more accurate answer than that.
Do you have to take a foreign language to really be a linguist?
Well, it depends. There are plenty of fine linguists out there who are barely fluent in their own native language. And, you know, it was kind of annoying because, like, that's the stereotype. Like in movies, somebody's a linguist and like, oh, well, surely you must be, you know, fluent in Arabic and Mandarin and whatever. And, you know, like I can get by in French. I used to live in France. And I know a little bit of a number of different languages. And there are certainly some linguists who do know a lot of languages, but I'm not one of them. I was sort of looking at language in a more academic way. Not so much with the field work and not so much with the breadth of learning a lot of languages in detail, but more looking at the structure of language as a generic thing. And, you know, there's so many different areas of linguistics. There's computational linguistics, which,
wait a minute, you sparked an interest there.
Well,
what is computational linguistics?
Well, John, have you ever talked to your computer? I mean, because I know you have, right? So all of the, like, anything
is involved. Is that related to speech synthesis, or it's the art and science of parsing language?
Sure. I mean, computational linguistics is broad, but anytime you are trying to get a computer to understand some aspect of language, whether, you know, we want the computer to understand something that I'm typing, just make sense of the words and do the right thing, or we want a computer to understand words that are spoken, or we want a computer to generate speech, or we want a computer to analyze a corpus of text and make some sense out of it or find themes in it or figure out, you know, by feeding in a dozen best-selling novels, can we figure out what's the code for writing a best-selling novel?
Figure out a double entendre from context.
Yeah. So there are just many, many aspects of computational linguistics and some really brilliant people working on this stuff. And if that happens to be the particular area of linguistics that you're interested in, you don't really need to necessarily know a foreign language to be able to do that. Other linguists work on, you know, child language acquisition or how the brain processes language, or, I mean, there are just so many different areas of it. Translation, of course. But I happen to be interested in translation, but really all of language fascinates me. I wish I wish I did speak more languages, but I kind of mostly get by in English.
That's fascinating. Makes me want to go back and start all over and be a computational linguist. That sounds cool.
Sounds you could.
Very cool. All right. So then you never told me how you got into the Mac, though.
Oh, well, yeah. So I'm in grad school and I'm getting toward the end and I'm working on my master's thesis. And I didn't own a Mac, but the school computer lab did have Macs, and so I got to play with them. And I thought the Mac was really neat, and so I thought that I'd use the computers in the computer lab to write my thesis. And I went to my advisor and I said, "Hey, you know, it's you know 1991, right? So let's be really, really modern here. And how about when I'm writing drafts of my master's thesis, instead of printing them out on paper and you take a red pen to them, what if I give them to you in Word format on a floppy disk?" And my advisor was like, "Well, you could do that, but you know, Word isn't just that great of a word processor. You should really look into this word processor called Nisus." So I did. I ordered a stack of demo floppy disks from Nisus software, and I installed this on one of the computers in the computer lab. And it's a word processor, right? I mean, this is the word processor that was later renamed Nisus Writer,
but infinitely saner than Word.
Oh, I think so. But you know, as I'm playing with this, I just kept going through all these submenus of submenus of submenus and looking at like the find and replace capability and this, like all these things it could do. And I just was completely geeking out. Like, wow, I have never seen a program like this that can do so much with text. And you know, text is kind of my thing. And so it was actually the existence of this word processor that made me want to switch from using a PC to using a Mac. And after I graduated, I scraped together my pennies and I bought a used Mac SE for, I don't know, like $400 or something. And I added a couple of megabytes of RAM and it had, you know, a 20 megabyte hard drive. And I immediately joined a Mac user group and I just like started soaking this stuff in like a sponge. I loved it.
It's a good thing you went with Nisus because about that time I was at Oak Ridge National Laboratory at that time, and I remember Microsoft Word 6.
Oh yes,
for the Mac, roughly maybe 92 or 93. And what they had done was they had written it in some oddball fashion where it was written for a PC and then reinterpreted or re-emulated for a Mac, and it was really, really slow. I mean, it took minutes to do anything at all. And at that point, Microsoft was really, really got a bad reputation for Word on the Mac. They had to redo it and go native later.
I remember that. We used to make fun of that all the time.
Yeah. Whereas Nisus was clean, sensible. Microsoft Word would drive you crazy because you would do what you thought was logical and then it would mess up your format and drive you nuts.
Yes, and I would like to be able to say, and of course that never happens anymore, but you know.
So falling in love with the Nisus Writer led to something cool, you told me.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I liked the Mac, but it was this app that really got me interested in wanting to own one. And then, so I got my own Mac and I started, you know, doing stuff with it. Of course, I had like other jobs. I wasn't doing this professionally. I did some temp work, on a Mac, you know, like I did temp work doing, you know, word processing and spreadsheets and things like that. But I was still really interested in Nisus Writer. And it turned out I decided to go back to grad school to get my PhD in linguistics. I didn't end up getting it, but I started on it. But I went to UC San Diego. And UC San Diego is just down the street, you know, half hour from where Nisus Software was headquartered. And I was able to get a job thanks to my experience with Nisus as a user. And I had even done some training in Nisus Writer. I was able to get a part-time job working for the company. So I was doing, yeah, like the, my first job for them was indexing their manuals for their new version. And then I did tech support. I did various other kinds of things. And then after some period of time, I decided I wasn't really enjoying my PhD program, and a full-time opening came up at NYSIS for a product manager for NYSIS Writer. So I basically said, yeah, I'll take that. And I quit school, and I went to work full-time in the computer industry.
That's a great place to take a break. We got to take a break right now. That's a great story. Folks, we're going to be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us. I'm talking to Take Control Books publisher, Joe Kissel.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage, where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
I'm chatting with Joe Kissel. So how did you feel about going to work for NYSIS?
It was kind of a dream job for me. I mean, I had, you know, I had really liked NYSIS, the word processor, and then its successor, NYSIS Writer. And it was kind of like a fanboy moment, you know, when like you've really admired someone for a long time, and then like you become their personal assistant or something. Like I don't really quite know what to compare it to, but it just sort of felt cosmically right to me that here is this program that I loved and that kind of got me into the Mac in the first place. And I went from being a very, you know, minor player in the company to actually being the product manager, and so that just felt so appropriate to me and just delightful. And I was really happy to have been influential in the design of NYSIS Writer for a couple of years. And even today, there are a couple things in, like, you know, it's gone through quite a lot of changes in the decades since then. But there are still some things that I can point to and say, hey, I invented that. I made that all those years ago.
You know, that's not the first time a guest has told me that they were in the right place, worked hard, knew some people, somebody left a job, somebody called them up, had made a connection. And that happened to you. That's how you became the product manager, right?
Yeah, it was very much that. I mean, of course, I could have said no, or I could have said, you know, school is more important to me and somebody else would have taken the job. But everybody knew that I was, you know, I had the experience, I was qualified. And but there was this, I'm sort of leaving out a pertinent detail, though, which is that by that time, I had actually written a book on NYSIS. And that, too, was a little bit of this being in the right place at the right time, because I was doing tech support. I mean, I was answering the AOL email for NYSIS, and a publisher in New York said, you know, sent an email to that address saying, we'd like to do a book on NYSIS Writer.
Awesome.
And they wanted to know if I would recommend someone. So I said, sure, you know, I know a bunch of authors. And I said, well, maybe Adam Angst could write the book for you, or a few other people. And they're like,
Maria
great,
Langer.
We'll look into that. Sorry?
Maria Langer, maybe.
I don't remember. I don't think she was on my list at that time. But
she's been on the show. She's awesome.
Yeah. So I mentioned a few people, but then I said, you know, now that you mention, I've always kind of wanted to write a book myself. Do you think that maybe I could write the book on NYSIS Writer? And the publisher was like, well, let's see if we can find somebody that's actually known first. somebody that, well, you know, somebody a little bit famous first. And And after all the famous people had turned them down, and I was able to like give them a writing sample, and they agreed that I was probably capable of doing it. They let me write the book. So that was my first book, and that happened while I was in grad school and working at NYSA Software full time or part time, and that was one of the things that sort of helped propel this into a full time job.
That's amazing. How long did you stay there? And is NYSA's Writer still available today for the Mac?
Yeah, so I was there for a few years, and then I moved on to work for Kensington up in the Bay Area. So back in those days, of course, this was the classic, you know, like Mac OS. This is, you know, System 7 and System, you know, 8, Mac OS 9. So it took, there was sort of a gap where NYSA's Writer hadn't made the leap to Mac OS X as early as most other apps did. There was a kind of a long story, but anyway, there was this gap where you could get the classic version of NYSA's Writer, but not a Mac OS X version. And eventually that appeared, and it took a while, several years, for it to kind of have rough feature parity with what the old version had. So there was a stretch in there when I used Word, because Word had, for all of its faults, it had the features I needed, whereas NYSA's Writer didn't, or at least the version that ran on Mac OS X didn't.
Publishers usually require you to submit your manuscript in Word anyway, right?
That is also true. Time passed, and there's kind of a long story there. But anyway, NYSA's Writer is back. It works on Mac OS X just fine, or Mac OS now. It has a wonderful set of features. I'm currently beta testing a major new version of it, I'm still delighted to have this tool. It still does some things that I can't imagine how I would get this stuff done if I had to use any other program. So it's a very, very powerful and flexible word processor. And
does it do things like export as docx and EPUB and things like that?
Oh yes, it does both of those things. I'll just give you one example. A guy wrote to me because he had written a book, and the book consisted, due to reasons, it consisted of 1,200 individual Word files. So these were like .doc, not even .docx, but .doc files. Each one of those files had some content and some footnotes. And his publisher needed to have word counts of the content for all 1,200 of those, and then separately a word count of the footnotes of all 1,200 of those. And he didn't want to have to kind of like open each one up in Word, select the main text, write that down, select the footnotes number, repeat 1,200 times. So I'm like, no problem. I will write a NYSA's Writer macro that will just do all that for you. And it'll spit out a nice table at the end with all the figures and all the totals. And I just did. And it was easy, and it was great, and it was fun to do. And like, you can get those numbers in other way, but it would be so tedious. And that's exactly the sort of delightful challenge that, that, you know, now that I'm a publisher, that I love to have such a powerful tool to solve.
Do you use it? Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but, I want to lead us towards, Kensington, and then, your work with, Take Control Books. So, let's talk about Kensington. Did you continue to write software there for them?
So I was hired at Kensington to be a software development manager. And my job was, what I thought my job was going to be, was to be in charge of the MouseWorks software. Excuse me. So what I thought my job was going to be was to be in charge of the Mouseware software development. So Mouseware is the software that goes with their mice and trackballs. Lets you, you know, change the speed and acceleration and program all the buttons and do a lot of that stuff. It runs on Mac and Windows, and it's really good software. The programming wasn't So the programming was kind of done by contractors, but I was basically managing all of the programmers. Around that time, though, Kensington acquired, or the parent company, I guess, also acquired Gravis, which was a developer of game controllers, game pads and joysticks and stuff. And so I also became in charge of developing the driver and user interface software, both for Mac and PC, for setting up your Gravis game controllers. So I did that for about 5 years. All that time I had like both a Mac and a PC on my desk. I wasn't doing the programming like I do, you know, the occasional Apple script or something like that. But I was really just managing, the programmers who were doing the heavy lifting and, helping to do design and testing and troubleshooting and things like that.
Was Kensington a fun company to work for?
I don't quite know how. I didn't think of it as being a fun company. I will say that before working at Kensington, I was a Kensington trackball user, and so I was familiar with the software. It didn't have like quite the emotional connection to me as Nicest Writer did, but it did feel like one of those really appropriate things. It was a kind of a small company that was owned by a much larger company. And there was a lot of corporate stuff going on and a lot of meetings and a lot of dollars. And it was kind of stressful in many ways. So I would say it was probably not as much fun as working at Nisus. But I don't want it to sound like it was miserable either. It certainly was not. I did lots of cool things there. I learned tons of stuff. I had some great coworkers. That was a long time ago. So I'm sure that the company has changed a lot since then. My memory of it is more of hard work than of a lot of fun, with a few little exceptions thrown in there.
Were you continuing to write books at this time?
No, I mean, I'd written a couple. I wrote the Nisus Way, and then I wrote a book on Cyberdog, which. So for those of you memories. Who don't know,
yeah, go ahead, tell us about
Cyberdog
that.
was Apple's suite of OpenDoc products, and for those who don't know what OpenDoc was, it was this new way in the mid 90s that people were going to write software from now on, that instead of having like these big gigantic things like Word and Quark and like all these gigantic programs, you just had little modules that you could put in containers. And
it was Apple's desperate attempt to try to undermine the power of Microsoft Office.
Yeah. So anyway, Steve Jobs came back to Apple right about the time that my book on CyberDog was published, and he promptly canceled OpenDoc. So that had a couple of effects on me. One was that it killed all future sales of my CyberDog book. But the second thing was that I had actually applied for and was offered a job at Apple of being the OpenDoc product manager. But that offer was contingent on a hiring freeze being lifted. And during the time that I was waiting for the hiring freeze to be lifted was when the OpenDoc project was canceled. And so I never got to work at Apple.
Sorry.
I must have been a bummer. But it's okay. I mean, I got another job and it was fine, but that happened.
That happens. All right. So we don't have too much time left. So I want to get on to how you became the owner and publisher of Take Control Books. Tell me that story.
So you had asked if I wrote books while I was at Kensington. I didn't, but I was told that I was being laid off, and I was given a very generous, like 90 days notice. Let's wrap up these few projects, nice severance package and all that. But you got 3 months left and then you're going to have to find something else. So a few days after I got that layoff notice, I got a call from the woman who had been the acquisitions editor on my very first book, like a decade previously, or more. And she said, hey, I'm working as a literary agent now. This company, has said we want to do this certain book. I thought of you. Are you still around? Are you available? Would you like to write another book? I'm like, as it turns out, I'm free to write books. So I wrote that book. And then several months later, I got a call from Adam Angst, who actually wrote the preface for that book. And he said, hey, Joe, you know, I know you like, I had written for Tidbits and stuff. And so I knew Adam for a long time. And he said, I'm getting together a group of authors. We want to do this little experiment in electronic publishing. We're going to make ebooks. And at that time, ebooks weren't really much of a thing. So I'm like, okay, sure. I'm not working right now. I'll write a book for you. And so I did. And that was the start back in 2003 of Take Control Books. And it was a little publishing experiment from Tidbits, but it took off. And, you know, we're now 15 years later, and there have been hundreds of Take Control books written by dozens of authors on so many different topics. And it's become quite a thing.
What are some of the best-selling Take Control books? I've always wondered. Can you tell me that? Is that a lot?
I wrote a book on backing up your Mac, and that was definitely one of our top-selling titles. That book has gone through kind of a lot of revisions. It's had different titles. It sort of split into two different topics at one time and then got joined back again and so forth. But by whichever title, that was quite a popular one.
All the different methods of backing up all the different products like Data Backup and Time Machine and Carbon Copy Cloner.
Like
go through the whole list.
I don't give complete instructions for every one of the more than 100 Mac backup programs. Wow. But I do give a lot of detail in it. So that's one. Kirk McElhern wrote a book on Scrivener. So Scrivener is a writing tool. People write novels, they write technical books, they write screenplays, they write all kinds of stuff in Scrivener. That has been one of our best-selling books. I wrote a book on iCloud, but before that, it was a book on MobileMe, and before that, it was a book on .Mac, and that sequence of books has sold very, very well. We've had so many other books on so many topics, but those were a few of the really, really big sellers.
Cool. You told me last week that you and your wife have bought an iMac Pro for the business.
Yeah, I am standing in front of it right now.
It's too bad we're only audio. The audience could see me turn green with envy.
I believe the color you're looking for is space gray.
Yes.
Yes. Well, it's nice. This is not the most expensive iMac Pro by any means, but it's not the lowest end model either. I'm quite happy with it. Last year Adam and Tanya decided to sell Take Control Books to me, so I have turned from an author to a publisher. And people will say to me, I mean, they joke about, well, why do you need an iMac Pro? And I will
question.
I do.
What's the ROI?
Yeah. Heavy duty word processing. And, you know, it used to be the joke that like, oh, well, you know, this computer is old. It's not very modern. Doesn't have all the bells and whistles. You can use it for basic things like word processing. If word processing is all you want to do, that's fine. But you need the, you know, more modern computer to
Except
do the
when search and replace takes 7.5 minutes. Then.
Well, but, you know, I mean, as part of my production process for making any of our Take Control books, I do actually have to run macros that might take 7.5 minutes. I mean, a lot less now than they used to because I have an iMac Pro, but I have to do some really long, complex, fancy, things that involve, text. And I'm really glad to have a fast, powerful tool to do that.
Is the difference dramatic compared to what you were using before? I mean, is the reaction, oh my God, this is so much faster?
Yes, it really is. I don't get that reaction when I'm like checking my email or something, when I'm typing in a plain text file. But there are some things that I do in the process of creating Take Control Books that The old way was I started macro running, and then I go like have a cup of coffee and take a walk around the block and come back a half hour later. And the new way is, wow, things are just flashing on the screen, and a minute later, the thing is done. And I'm like, did it not run? What happened there? And it's just done. It just happened. So, I'm digging the iMac Pro. It could even be faster. there are some, like Nicest Writer, for all its virtues, it really is not optimized for this many cores and all this, all these resources. There are things that I wish happened even faster still, but it does help me get my work done a lot more efficiently.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, in the minute or two we have left, I wanted to get whimsical with you. You said something interesting to me the other day about walking and thinking, and you've also been involved in Tai Chi. I did Kenpo myself for many years.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to ask you about, are you still involved with Tai Chi?
I am. So I got involved in Tai Chi. Gosh, it must have been while I was working at Nicest Software. Yes, in fact, it was. I remember. Yes. I'm still doing Tai Chi. I'm in an advanced class. We meet every week, and I love it. It's good for like health and blood pressure and balance and all those good things. I've never had to put it to use as a martial art in terms of actually like, somebody's trying to beat me up and I'm defending myself, but I could, I know how to do that.
Tai Chi is also heavily into balance, right?
Yeah, it's balance, leg strength. And I got into it initially all those years ago because I just wanted to learn how to move my body gracefully. I was never into athletics or dance or anything, any kind of physical thing as a kid. And, that was kind of what got me interested in it. But so it does that, but also there's some really great philosophy behind it that really helps with dealing with conflict and, understanding, interpersonal relationships better. And I really like it for all of those aspects, the physical, the, yes, physiological, the martial, but also kind of the meditative and the, the interpersonal stuff. It's really good stuff.
I have always recommended it. You talk about the psychology of it, a lot of students who think they might want to take karate in high school or junior high school have a feeling, because maybe they've seen the wrong movie, that their instructor is going to brutalize them, that they're going to be made to do things they cannot do, that they're going to end up injured, that it's going to be a dreadful life experience and lead to unnecessary bullying or being bullied. And every karate school I've been exposed to, the instructors are awesome. The instruction aspect of it, the health and physical awareness and the elements of the martial arts are always at the highest level. And it's great for young people. And if you think that you're going to be in an uncomfortable situation in karate school, it's probably wrong. It's probably going to be the best experience of your life, don't you think?
Well, my 7-year-old son is taking karate lessons right now. So, the thing about Tai Chi is whatever other virtues it may have, it's really not going to hold the attention of a 7-year-old. Like some of my Tai Chi teachers have said that progress in Tai Chi is measured in decades. And that's really not what a 7-year-old wants to hear.
That's right.
He is not at all an aggressive kid. He is a really sweet kid who wants to avoid conflict and make friends and be happy all the time. But he's doing great in karate, and I think that's a really appropriate fit for him. And I happen to prefer Tai Chi, but I do think there's a lot of value just in the discipline and the character building and the health benefits of whatever martial art.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I agree. So now we really are out of time. This has been a fascinating story. Thanks for sharing all this with us, Joe.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for having me.
I hope this gives the listeners better insights into you and your work. And everybody go to Take Control Books and learn a whole bunch of stuff from these ebooks. It's great. So finally, tell the audience how they can contact you if they wish.
So if you want to find me on Twitter, that's at Joe Kissel, two S's, two L's. You can go to joekissel.com. I don't really post things there very often, but almost always at least once a year. And of course, for books that I have written and that other really excellent tech authors have written, go to takecontrolbooks.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks again, Joe. It's nice chatting with you.
Thank you, John.
Listeners, I really hope you enjoyed the show too, and I'm glad you came by. You've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you next week.